I got addicted to oxycodone, which is highly addictive, went through withdrawals of that, like to the point of like felt so alone, shaking by myself, felt cold, like it was never going to end. Emily would be like, yeah, I'd be down to play in another church. And I was like, really? And girl, this was like a year ago. And I'm like, are you serious? And she's like, absolutely. Like, that was some of the best times we had. And and I'm like, you're right. And like, if I felt called to help with another church plant, by all means, I would now. That's just, there was a lot of healing that I had to do in my own heart too.
When the doctor says you have cancer, what's like the first few things that go through your head?
Patrick Barger, take one.
I would have had like scene six three. Takes with, would have had like six takes with Tracy.
Scene three. It's like after the 40th attempt.
Yeah.
Peer nurse.
Peer nurse.
Peer nurse.
Okay. Okay. Well, welcome to Church with Chris. I have my good friend Patrick Barger here this evening. And let's see, Bitcoin hit about $63,000 today. So that's your marker for where we're at in the year.
Yep.
Pat doesn't care about that at all.
Absolutely not.
Okay. Well, one of us will be rich someday.
I just really want to make sure my Beanie Babies are still holding their value. That's all. Well, that's all I want.
I've heard they are. But I want to welcome you. Thank you for joining us for this episode. Pat is going to tell us all about his life today, which is very interesting. I want you to know that one of the things that people ask me all the time is, I think I had about three different people ask me just in the past week, hey, how do I start a podcast? What do I use to start a podcast? So if you're interested in that, the links to all the stuff that I use, the cameras, the microphones, the lights, all that stuff are in the description and the comment section of YouTube. They might also, I think they're on the audio as well. So the podcast is now on Spotify and Apple Podcast, if that's how you listen. And if you want to watch, obviously, YouTube. So if you're listening right now, you can watch the video. If you want to know what Pat looks like, you can watch the video. And he got a haircut just for this. I can tell.
It's not much to look at, to be honest.
It's really not. Nice.
Thank you. Yeah, I appreciate it.
I admire the finer things in life these days.
You know, like normal hair. Some of us have hair. Some of us have cancer. It's fine. Oh,
yeah. Okay. Well, so we are going to get into my friend Pat's cancer. We're going to talk about what we have experienced with church planting, helping start a church, and then also kind of Pat's calling into ministry. So I actually want to start there. So Pat and I have been good friends for a long time now, ever since college. We both went to Baptist Bible College. So Pat, I'm going to open up with, why did you want to go to a Bible college? What caused you to make that weird, strange, terrible, I mean, great decision?
Great. Well, I actually grew up in the church. So it was the same church my mom grew up in. So I have experience of this idea of like a Christian college or Bible college my entire life. But I didn't really know it until probably high school that I had no idea what I wanted to do with the rest of my life. And so at this point, I went to all the camps like every youth does, and I actually surrendered to full-time ministry. I went down, did the whole thing. You know, everyone kind of knows that old-fashioned way. But I didn't really understand like the severity of it or what that kind of looks like. And so when
severity, you make it sound like a death sentence.
It's a heavy burden. You can't like
some
go
people
into
have
ministry.
Cancer. Some people get called into ministry.
That's right. But
and
like
some people both.
But you have to understand, like this missionary is in a foreign field, and like if they mention the name of Jesus, they could be killed off. Like it's really intense. So it wasn't probably until like my junior and senior year of college that I was like, well, I guess this is like my calling and this is going to be the first step in trying to figure out where to go and kind of what to pursue. Because there's just so many different degrees out there, even back in, 14 years ago or something like that, when we only had a list of things and now you can get a degree in anything. But it came down to two schools. It was Liberty University, which is well known, and then Baptist Bible College. And honestly, it came to the point that I flipped a coin where to go. And
I literally
flipped a coin.
Okay.
Because I was like, which is a good thing, because one was a little bit more expensive than the other. So we kind of did well there. And I'm thankful for my time at BBC, too. Like, I got to make some of the best friendships I've had, obviously, some worse than others. And so, but it's one of those things that, like, it was a great location. It was also far away enough from my family. I kind of wanted to venture out by myself and kind of do my own thing. I was not a homebody. I wanted to see different things and experience life outside of a little small town of Groseal, Michigan. So that's how I kind of ended up there. It was a roller coaster for a while. My parents didn't want me to go, especially my dad, but eventually they signed off on it. And yeah.
The rest is history.
The rest is quote unquote history.
Well, it's funny you say that about like flipping a coin, because one of my favorite proverbs says that the dice is cast into the lap, but it's every decision is of the Lord, which has always really messed with me as far as like providence and what like the will of God is and what God causes and what he allows us to choose, you know, that whole kind of dynamic. And that verse has always just kind of like, man, because there are times in the Bible when people actually cast lots to figure out who's going to be the next disciple, who's going to be the next, you know, what decision are we going to make here? Mm-hmm. And if you know that there is some divine providence in that, it's kind of really cool in hindsight to see like where you are because of maybe the steps you took.
And I think it was, honestly, I was just a dumb high schooler and didn't understand the heaviness of that.
That
and
too.
It wasn't until older I was like, oh, okay, like I can see that like the Lord, it is such a beautiful thing that the Lord is allowing you to see his glory and his beauty. And it's not this just direct straight line that you have to follow, like A plus B equals C. Like the Lord has like provisioned so much in my life, and we'll talk about that, but it's just so cool how those things line up, and it doesn't connect to us, but God has an ultimate plan that makes sense.
Yeah.
So
you wanted to be a missionary. So that's what took you to BBC, right? Baptist Bible College. So, which has been renamed as of like, what, 2 weeks ago? Three weeks ago?
It's been a couple months, man. It's
Mission University.
Mission University. Mission.edu, you know?
Very controversial. I'm just kidding. I really like the name. I like the heart behind the name. I do think it sounds a little, I thought Mormons the first.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? But I like the name change.
Absolutely.
Overall.
It's something different. I think they wanted to change it just because I think it closed a lot of doors for some people to be in quote unquote ministry or be a part of a Christian school. Mm. So I'm excited for them and see what happens. You know, it's been a while since I've been there, so
I really valued my time there. I remember the last day I was there, going to sit. I sat on a bench. It was like my car was packed up, everything. I sat on a bench in the middle of campus, and I just kind of cried. And I remember the opposite happened when I got there. I think I shed tears of sadness because I was like, I remember getting out of my car, and I thought it was full of stuff. I was about to unpack, and I thought, I'm 8 hours from Columbus, and I just made the biggest mistake of my life. Moving from like a Big Ten school to, you know, and so, the Lord's providence is interesting. You know, I'm glad I did it. So what do you think of your overall experience at a Bible college? So I guess, you know, specifically BBC, but it'd probably be relatable to others that go to a small Christian school.
Yeah. So my experience overall was, I would say, a good experience. I think the education part of me at the time, I think I was 18, just didn't care as much and wasn't invested in the classes itself. There was a few that I was interested in, but didn't put all my time and effort into those things. So I kind of regret not doing that from the beginning. But the one thing I understood was the local church more and how much the local church is providing and helping pursue these things as well. And just different things like internships, being able to be a part of missions conference, because the church I went to, like, I think it might have been just my age of understanding and just not being able to truly understand what the church is and what that's doing. And it maybe needed me, like, both physically and spiritually maturing to understand it more. So going to the church that we did, I got to see all these sides of ministry, from the missions field all across the world to, like, preaching and then getting involved in serving, which I'd never done before. I moved to Missouri, and it's honestly really thankful for that, because it's built relationships that I still have people I talk to today, or if I run into someone randomly at a wedding or a funeral, like I can still talk to them. Like it's a good relationship to have.
Yeah, I think it's kind of rare that people get married and then you go back and see a bunch of friends from college. At least that's my experience. It's like I have friends obviously from other colleges, but it's like I don't think I'm going to run into them at it. any given wedding from a friend. So it was just a unique experience at such a mm-hmm. small school. The only way somebody described it to me was church camp all yeah. the time. And it kind of was. But it was cool like that. I don't know.
Yeah. No, we were just at a wedding in January for Chris Todd, and we got to see a bunch of people from BBC, and it was kind of like no time had passed. And it wasn't like these super close friends we had, but they were good, solid friends that we were just able to catch up on life and what the Lord's doing in their life. And it's just like really cool to have those relationships ongoing too.
Yeah. In hindsight, would you have done something different though? Would you have gone to a school that wasn't like a Christian-based school, or like would you have gone to a bigger school? Because obviously, so things haven't quite worked out for you in the quote unquote mission field, or like what you thought you were going to be doing, right? So
yeah.
Do you ever think like, man, I wish I would have gotten a different kind of degree that prepared me? And just for context, Pat and I have had three different jobs together. So we worked at church together.
Yep.
We worked at the courthouse in Bartholomew County and the clerk's office. And then we also currently work at Konica Minolta.
Yep.
A printer and fax company where we do phone systems. So
that's great.
So I think we've both felt that though in the pursuit of other jobs, like, cause it's tough to do vocational ministry full time sometimes if you're helping at a place that can't always afford it. Right.
Yeah.
So we'll get into our church plant season a little bit, but the working bivocationally is always hard. But if you don't have a degree that you feel like can set you up to get a decent job, what's that been like for you?
It took me a while to get my degree. That's a whole nother story. But I think I don't regret anything. I don't regret the school or the decision by any means, because it's got me where I am today for sure. With the degree side of things, it's just so funny being out in the world. And we've talked to people about this. Like, there's people at my job right now that don't have a degree and make as much money as I do.
Or more.
Or more. And so it's one of those things of understanding of what that looks like to be in ministry is changed for me, especially like moving here, and we'll get into that. But it's just the opportunity to just serve and get plugged in at the local church. And that's like the most important thing. So with or without a degree, I'm still going to be doing that, pursuing that, and trying to serve the Lord that way.
Yeah. But no, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And the Lord provides, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, we've gotten random jobs, and it has been more about who we've known, I think, than what we've known, which, 100%. You know, at every place, I can confidently say that. So my bosses have always been my friends, pretty much.
Yes.
Which is awesome.
Like, which is great.
Yeah. Praise God. He provides for his saints. So before you moved here, though, in college, it'll kind of make sense kind of as we're talking through this conversation. The way I wanted to work through this, there are kind of three different phases. We're going to talk about your ministry plans, what you had planned to do, and kind of in college, how that changed, and then the church planting season, and then your current season of dealing with cancer. So we're going to get to the cancer piece. I just need to build up. I was explaining to Bria why I had kind of laid some questions out this way in the conversation, and I think part of it's to understand what somebody has been through.
Yeah.
And when you describe what you've been through, I think I told her a lot of people, I think, would have really just kind of thrown in the towel on God. And kind of been like, I devoted my life to you, and some really bad things have happened to me, and things just haven't worked out the way I've wanted, and like, deuces, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I'm out. Like, I'm done trying to serve this God, right?
Who
lets thing after thing happen to me. So in college, you know, what year was it when you had a pretty, like, very, very serious accident? Go ahead and describe that.
So in 2013, there is the fall of man, and then there's the fall of Pat, is what we call it. But that will make sense in a second. So essentially, I was working in a church at maintenance that was plugged in at, loved. And essentially, I was in a scaffolding or a cherry picker lift, and the whole thing tipped over with me in it. And so what caused that to happen was huge reconstruction in my left foot, my left vertebrae. Two of them were fractured, millimeter away from being paralyzed, like this huge thing that happened. And I wasn't 20 years old. And so after all of this kind of like trauma happened, it was like I was on my own doing my own thing. I was in like a process of trying to do like an overseas missions trip to like Amsterdam. Like I was lining everything up and then this mm-hmm. happened. And long story short, went from Missouri all the way back to Michigan to be at home because I couldn't take care of myself. I wasn't able to do stuff on my own at that time. And I was just so defeated because it was at this point where I felt like everybody was off doing their own thing. And I was just kind of stuck in this phase of just being at home with my family. And through that too, a lot of stuff came up, just like really hard to be alone in that as well. Like I said, like the church wasn't really there for me because I wasn't a part of a church.
Back home.
But at the same time, like different things were occurring, like the amount of like prescription opioids that doctors used to give is crazy thinking about it now. And so I got addicted to oxycodone, which is highly addictive, unannounced to me, went through withdrawals of that, like to the point of like felt so alone, shaking by myself, felt cold, like it was never going to end. But thankfully that eventually passed of that initial time there. But it was a really rough season in understanding, like, I had all these things lined up that were not bad. Like I was trying to glorify God, but it kind of like was shot down. Like it was just not the time or anything. And so it kind of backtracked everything and made me rethink a lot. And just spending time alone maybe was a good thing for me because I was never the person that liked to be alone. Like I needed people around me. I loved the energy. But at the same time, I'm like, the Lord did show me a lot of patience through that process and leaning into Him more than I ever have in my life.
Yeah. Wow. And you had been in school for how long at that point?
Let's see. I was 20. I think I was about 2.5 years in.
Okay.
I think I was right around there. It was, yeah, January 15th, 17th, something like 17th of 2013. So.
Yeah. I remember. I mean, obviously, I didn't know all of it at the time. You know how much I don't think we ever truly know how much people are struggling. Like if we don't see them all the time. But even you know, years later, you had described just like serious withdrawals, and you know that has really. I kind of wanted you to share that story, because that really changed sort of the trajectory of what you were going to do and where you were going to go with your life. So it made it really tough to finish school. For you, right? And then I think eventually what BBC started offering online classes, which helped, helped you finish out.
It, in the beginning, like when I was at home, they only offered some things and it was just hard with what I was going through at the time and all of it didn't line up. And I wasn't the best version of myself at that time too. So there was points where I was lying to professors too. Like it just not who God intended me to be. Like I was being very sinful and asked for repentance later on, but it's just one of those things that it just kind of lined me up to like progress my degree to another 10 years. It was really sad. And going back and thinking about it is tough, but it also makes me understand and relate to people too, of like what they're going through. If anyone understands or going through an addiction or withdrawal, like you, I can understand where they're coming from too. Like it's something that messes you up so deeply that you don't understand. And like, I was in Bible college, like I was reading my Bible, I was serving the Lord, and I got addicted to painkillers, and I'm still this horrible person lying and deceiving people. And it was not a fun time, but thank God for repentance and forgiveness. So.
Yeah, for sure. And it is pretty wild that God would move you to do something crazy like moving to Columbus.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and so I think in that season of probably just despair and trying to figure out what was next, you know, did you have anything else lined up? Did you ever think like, well, I don't really need a degree to go do missions work? Or like, what was your thought process there? Like, when did you think you gave up on that? As far as like going like overseas,
being ambitious,
when do you think that kind of shifted?
I think after my time, so I was at home for several months. My recovery was over 9 months. And then I went back to school for a year and I just couldn't keep up. I wasn't doing well. And so I eventually ended up back at home and I just didn't like being at home. I had lived with my parents and being out on my own for so long. And so the point came up of just like this church plant that I knew of for years, like since I met you guys, like I knew you guys speaking of it, talking about it, what you're doing. And I was like, well, I'm not doing anything. Like I have all this time, like I'm just working in a pawn shop right now, trying to make ends meet. And I'm like, why don't I just go there and live? I had a girlfriend who's now my wife, and I'm like, I'm going to go and do it, now's the time. Like, why not try something, move somewhere new and start over? Mm. I like that challenge at some times. Now I don't. I don't think I could ever do that.
I ain't going nowhere.
No, I ain't going nowhere. I'm staying home. It's Friday night, 8:30. I'm going
right.
to bed.
That's right.
But no, I just fell in love with the people of Columbus. Just with everyone that was involved with the church plant just felt so loved when I visited before, because a lot of friends were here, just felt love the community that was here. And the idea of like missions was just kind of not brought from like overseas, but understanding ministry in general, what that kind of looks like.
Yeah.
And everywhere is a mission field. Like Columbus is made up of so many people, of like 7-generation farmers to people who literally just came over here from India.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a mission field in its sense. So my idea, my focus shifted from overseas to this is where I'm at. This is a great opportunity. Why not serve the Lord here? And the door opened up and the Lord just allowed for me to come here. So
yeah, I mean, it is like for the church plant stuff, like it was such a cool vision, just the thought that like not every place is as diverse as Columbus in the mm-hmm. freaking Midwest, like some yeah. random small town. And there's this whole idea of, you know, and we heard at school all the time, like go to the nations, like that God's call yeah. and God's will is for you to go to the nations. And it's like, well, God is bringing the nations here.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely. And what better way than to disciple people here who will probably end up going back where a lot of them where they come from.
Exactly.
Right? So whether that's through jobs or just going back to family or whatever. So yeah, the vision was super strong, and I really love that you brought that up.
Yeah.
So what do you think was the straw that broke the camel's back where you were like, all right, I'm going to move. I'm going to do it. Was it something that happened to you?
I think it was just to move here. I was just like, I can't be in my parents' home anymore. I'm done. I'm out. I love my family, but they were just driving me crazy. And I was just like, couldn't do anything. It felt like I was very constricted, like I was 16 again. So I was like, I think that was just like, I needed it now. And I think they knew I needed to leave. Like they saw that and understood that. They were okay with me moving. They're like, okay, it's fine. Like,
still got to be hard.
It is hard.
After watching you go through what you've been through in the past, past couple years.
Oh yeah, my poor mom. I put her through a lot. Like everything in the healing that I had to take place at home, and then the idea like I'm the only person who moved away from home. Like everyone within my family on both sides is like within an hour of the Metro Detroit area.
Yeah.
And so it's like this idea that why would you leave? You got everything you have here, family and everything like that. And like, we have such a great community here that now we're like, okay, like this is something that we truly love. And we do love our family back home, but we also like created a family here.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would say we have a close group of friends that feels like a family. It's like
absolutely.
I could see doing that for forever, you know.
Yes.
And I'm really grateful for you guys, for you and Emily mm-hmm. and some others. So I do, you know, we've talked about on the channel before just that whole process of starting a church. We've never shared like a ton of details because mm-hmm. obviously things don't always work out like the way that you want them to, you know.
Yeah.
Relationships get broken, you know, friendships kind of get broken. There are just divisions and different things. And that's not just in churches. That's in all kinds of phases of life. People mm-hmm. just kind of have disagreements. They part ways and that's it. So I think being very involved, like from really the very beginning, you kind of listening to things, as like Pastor Aaron and I were talking like at BBC about like, we're going to do this thing. And it was like several years before it actually started. Right.
Yeah.
And just thinking through it, praying through it. And then, like, hey, this is what God's called us to do. We're going to do it. I think, did Aaron make a bet with you? If
yeah.
you weren't doing a certain thing
no,
by a certain
time,
wasn't
it?
It
was him and Drew that if I didn't make this rec team, that would have to come and live.
The summer team,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, it live in Columbus
okay.
for the summer
okay.
was the yep. quote-unquote. But I didn't make the rec team and I didn't live here, but I just ended up moving here. Mm. So it's kind of this like, okay, like it happened. Like it was definitely provision for me to be here. So
yeah. But. And then it probably didn't help the summer I stayed with you. The summer after I graduated, you were recovering from surgery, I guess.
Oh, yeah. I had like a total at 2013. I had like 7 or 8 surgeries that I had done. So I was coming off the mend of that one. And Chris was my at-home nurse. So that was great.
Yeah.
Yep. He took care of me. Anytime we had to go grab food somewhere, he would complain that he had to carry my stuff in because I had crutches. So
Pilot Point, Texas.
Pilot Point.
Midway Church.
Aubrey,
Pilot Point.
Area. You got
Midway Church. Loved Midway Church.
Absolutely.
Also, you mentioned High Street Church earlier in Springfield. That's where we both went to church for a few years. Loved High Street.
Yes.
Loved Midway. Mm-hmm. Loved those ministries. So we spent a summer together when you were basically crippled the whole time.
Yep.
And really just not super mobile, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you really weren't. And so it was great to spend that summer with you. I'm sure listening through conversations about church plant stuff, all of that, those were like seeds, I think, probably that just fed into like, okay, I've heard as much about this as probably anybody will.
Right.
Right. So you kind of knew what you were walking into to some extent.
Right. Well, every weekend we were up in Dallas or down.
Oh,
whatever
that's
the
true.
Time.
That's true.
Every weekend we were going to the Village Church with Aaron and Cora, and we were taking that in, and you guys were just talking about the name of the church. Like, I remember the time where you were like, trying to figure out what do we call ourselves? What do we call ourselves? And I remember in the car when they talked about what the church name was.
Yeah.
And it was it like all planned together like of that to be moving here. Like that was definitely just such a cool thing. And like I said before, the relationships, the reason why I moved here was all of that and understanding. And I'm like, okay, if these four people are so great and they're going to Columbus, like or from Columbus, why can't I be a part of that too?
Yeah.
That Indiana crew in college, that's what they called it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so you started working at the church, I don't know how long in, but you actually got hired. You were there from day one with the launch team and all that stuff, but you got hired eventually to do the role of connections ministry, right?
Yeah.
So thinking back on that, how fruitful do you think that time was? Like, what do you think you learned doing that role specifically?
So much.
And just imagine, like, for those listening, everything was set up and tear down every single week. So every bit of everything that we did, we rolled into or carried into a theater, right? Yes, cinema downtown Columbus, or after that, Central Middle School. So every Sunday, everywhere you went, you were setting up signs, you were, you know, handing out name tags, getting out all the bins, unloading the trailer, all the stuff, right? So anybody who's been part of a church plant knows that it is just exhausting to create systems that are sustainable for that kind of thing to where you're not wearing out volunteers or just wearing out yourself, right? Burning the candle too hard. So what do you feel like you learned during that season specifically for Connections Ministry?
I think just understanding people, understanding like why people don't get plugged in or anything like that. I think the Lord was just teaching me like, okay, you're in this position of connecting with people, being hospitable with people. And what does that look like? And trying to create that and understand that, because that's one of the things I believe I thrive on, because I've felt so left out at different times in my life or felt connected in certain groups. And so it's like, I want to make sure someone comes in and that they're not bombarded, but they feel like they can know someone, get to know someone. I didn't want the team to just be a hi, welcome. Like, I just wanted to, hey, let me get to know you because you're here and it's so good to see you here. And it made me grow and challenge that, because there were some days like I was like, I'm not feeling it. Like, I don't want to go and introduce myself to somebody new. And just because I drained, I stayed up the night before, like something about it. Like, it was just it taught me that, like, there is so much that could be at stake there that could be missed or dropped. And I dropped the ball several times when connecting with people. But it just made me grow and appreciate people and their growth and their understanding in a church as well.
Yeah. I can vouch for this like 100%. You and Emily are some of the most hospitable people in the whole world.
It's all
and
Emily. It's all her.
It's all Emily?
It's all Emily.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're still that terrible.
I'm still that terrible
drug
addicted. No growth. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, sneaking pills under the table.
Nothing's changed.
Yeah. That's why I got cancer. So.
Yeah. Yeah, no, really, you guys are fantastic. And I know you guys hosted groups for a long time and things like that. And you absolutely love that. And I think you're right. I think I see the better side of Pat when Pat has people around. Somebody was saying in our office today, they just cannot wait for you to be back from your medical leave because they just love to hear you sing in the office.
Oh, Oh, Tamara. I know that's
right. It was Tamara. Yeah, I know. It was Tamara. She said she's going to listen to this,
Her office is next to mine, so she just hears me play Aaron all the time.
That's
so.
Right. But no, it's a culture thing. It's like there's some people, when they're around, life just is more joyful, and you're one of those people. So I think that for my life, I think a lot of friends would say that too. And so I think you were in the just a really great role in the connections role. Like everybody drops the ball sometimes at different roles, right? I did as the worship minister. Like it just happens, you know, it just, you upset people. Somebody messaged me the other day that I was, whose feelings I had hurt once at church. And I think about them a lot. They had messaged me for a different reason. Mm. But, you know, I'll never forget that I hurt their feelings, like big time. Like they were really, really upset because of something that I failed to do. And that sucks. It sucks to think back on that stuff. But, you know, times that you miss, you know, you forget somebody's name, you forget to make a phone call, you forget to make the connection, you know, to reach back out to that person, like, oh, shoot, it's been like a month and I haven't reached out, you know. I think it happens to everybody.
Yeah.
But with that said, I think you were great at the role. And I think you were just really kind of born for something like that. And so I appreciated you having you in that role, because you actually took over for somebody else who was really good at it, Laura Fadauer. She did a great job while she was doing that role as well. So, I mean, she handed off a great ministry to you. Yeah. It was great to watch you thrive in that and just, just be such a welcoming, hospitable person.
Yeah.
What about that whole season do you think was the most challenging thing?
I think the hardest thing was we were busy not being able to leave. So like I said, all our family was in Michigan or things like that. But we were so plugged in and involved at the church doing so much that we could have, like, we would have been cleared to Aaron, have been like, yeah, go ahead, find someone to cover and things like that. But we were just so involved and kind of felt that weight that we're like, oh, we have to be here. We have to do this. Like, especially during the COVID season and trying to connect with people. I think that was just so hard to kind of be away from family at time, especially like we got married here. Like, well, our life is here, but we still have a lot of family back home that, like, over the weekends we can do a weekend trip, but it's like, oh, we have to be back for church on Sunday. Like, it's it was hard, but it was a good season. Like, I can't deny it. It was tough, like the setup, tear down, everything we did, like being heavily involved, like there was a lot of growth. Like, I don't take it back, but it was just hard not having as much freedom and like being able to go visit or take a trip that we felt like we couldn't take.
So much of that was like self-inflicted, right?
Because
I think I felt the same way. And part of it was, to be really transparent, part of it I think was just arrogance on my part. And maybe you would feel the same way, where you didn't think anybody could do as good a job as you. So, you know, and maybe you wouldn't say that. Maybe you had some studs on your team that were like, oh, they're better than I was at that. I think in that season, there was just an arrogance I had that it wasn't going to be quite as good if I wasn't there, or not even not be as good, but like something was going to get dropped, something was going to fall apart, there's going to be some issue that happens that like somebody didn't know how to solve, and you know, like that was really scary. And I had some different responsibilities, like opening up the theater, getting all the stuff turned on, you know, unlocking everything, making coffee, like just some different things that that I felt like, man, this, it's almost just too much work to teach other people how to do it. So that was just like one, really bad delegation, and two, just like arrogance, straight up arrogance on my part. There's always somebody that, you know, can probably do it just fine.
Yeah. And we, like, the expectation is to do it perfectly, or like how we would do it.
Yeah.
And I know, like, there was times I wasn't there and someone else took over and it was fine. Like, it was great. Yeah. Everything, like, the church didn't burn down. Like, things were set up. Could things have been missed? Yeah. But it was delegating to someone who has those giftings to be able to grow in that. Like, how are we allowing people to grow in ministry if we're not giving them the chances to do that as well? Like, I think there was a couple people on my team that I could definitely see getting plugged in and like being able to help and serve and have the same gifts and similar to mine, where I'm like, this would be a great team for them to be a part of and lead, especially.
Yeah, I think, you know, and even in training people with and building a culture, you know, it was huge, because I even remember our mutual friend, Mike Parsons.
Yes.
The reason he had told me that they had gone and they had stayed at Athens for a while, was their first Sunday there, I think it was Tracy. who greeted him.
Yep.
My brother.
Yeah.
And, you know, part of that, again, is like a training culture of like, hey, you want to reach people. You want to reach, you want to make people feel at home.
Yeah.
You know, you're actually going, you're like actively going to get people. Not, you know, that sounds weird, but like.
No, you like you, I mean? You're engaging, you see that and recognize it.
Right.
Because some people have that gift and connect with people really easy. Some people don't. And that's okay too. That's just not where they should maybe be serving, but like Tracy can do that. He can have a conversation with anybody. Like he's great in getting to know people. So it is so cool to see those things come to fruition too.
Do you ever wish you had not done that and maybe gone to work at like a more established church instead?
I don't regret anything that happened. I am so glad I got to be a part of it, like and be there and serve. I think there would have been different dynamics if it was more of an established church. But at the same time, we were able to build the church how we kind of wanted to view, like what it would look like. We were allowed to put input with one another, and the idea of like, you can't just go, usually you just don't go to a church and rebuild everything right away and restructure how you do things.
Sure.
Like that causes chaos. But when we were starting out from the ground, we were kind of like, oh, we get to help in that process of seeing what that looks like, how we build this out.
Mm-hmm.
So to answer your question without answering is yes and no. Like it's like this weird dynamic. Like we've had friends who were in established churches and they were no longer there. And that's really sad.
Right.
But at the same time, like...
Or have been at like several established churches.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's just it's so sad. But I don't regret it for a second. Like, it's church planning is tough in itself. Like, the season after that, if you were to come up to me, like, a month after everything happened, be like, do you want to plant a church again? I'll be like, absolutely not. There's
absolutely
no way.
Not.
There is no way.
I'm still saying it's that. Like, people joke about it, and it's like, no.
I'm just like, no. I'm just like, and now in the sense of, like, I talked with Emily about this. It's like, Emily would be like, yeah, I'd be down to plant another church. And I was like, really? And
girl,
this was like a year ago. And I'm like, are you serious? And she's like, absolutely. Like, that was some of the best times we had. And I'm like, you're right. And like, if I felt called to help with another church plant, by all means, I would now. That's just, there was a lot of healing that I had to do in my own heart too, before that could even be a thought in my head.
Yeah. Do you think it's shaped, I mean, you might help with another church plant or something, you know, in the future at some point, but do you think it shaped the way that you view vocational ministry? Because you only did it part-time, right? It wasn't full-time, so we had full-time jobs, right?
Yeah.
So has that kind of changed your desire to do that?
No, I don't think it's shaped. Like, I would, like going back to what I said at the time, no, after all that hurt, I'm like, no, not ever happening again.
Yeah, right.
But like now I'm like, any way I can serve the Lord at that capacity, that would be great.
Mm.
But also like, I can do the same thing at my current job, because you and I both know there's people there that don't know the Lord or don't live the life that like we're called to live. So it's like, where can we be reaching more people? On a stage or in a church where most people are already believers, or somewhere outside where we can be connecting with people. So I would say I would love to work in a church again. Yes. Would I go about it differently? Absolutely. And how I'm not focused so much inside, but outside the church as well.
Yeah. Just being Jesus to people outside the church. Yeah. Day in and day out.
Absolutely.
Not just, and that's the unique thing too about a workplace that's not working at a church. And I think some people get conditioned to where like they don't even really understand what it's like to work with people who aren't Christians.
Yeah.
If you work at a church long enough, like you just kind of
You don't get it.
You don't know how to relate to people. You don't know how, like, you know, I don't know. It's strange, right? And so you're just able to have different conversations.
Yeah.
But you're also, you know, you got to be careful because you want to rep Christ well, but a workplace can offer its own, like a secular workplace or, you know, marketplace can just offer different challenges that are going to cause me to walk into your office and complain all day about whatever it is, right? And, you know, on a break, we're on a walk around downtown and I'm just complaining about, and we've had to call each other out
absolutely
on that stuff before too, because it's like, man, I am just so negative, like about customers or, you know, whatever, whatever it is, organizational structure, you know, you name it. It's like, man, if we, it's almost like if one of us opens the floodgate, like
it's the opportunity. It's just like, all of us are just like, yeah.
Oh, you won't believe.
And we think it's okay. Like, it's just like this normal, like, work thing that you have to work through. And like, yes, there is troubles and things to work out.
Right.
But like, are you opening the door to let, like, as soon as you open that door, you're letting things allow to come in too. Like,
right.
And hardness and working through. But yeah, we call, hopefully we continue to call each other. I haven't been at work in 5 months, so I don't know. But <I've> been, it's me and my dogs, they don't call me out on anything these days. So
that's true.
Yeah.
If you don't feed them.
I don't feed them.
Yeah. Do you think it's been pretty challenging? What steps have you taken to try to work through everything that happened with that? I want to have a conversation in a couple months. I'm hoping, I know I'm going to have one friend on, Scott Hunley, and then potentially his son-in-law too, who's a counselor and does a lot of work with trauma around that kind of thing. And so one of the things I want to talk to them about is what that looks like from their side on dealing with different kinds of trauma, but specifically like spiritual trauma and like trauma, traumatic church experiences, like how much that plays into people's faith and like whether they walk away from their faith or whether, you know, because I think that would be a really easy place. And we see people do it every day who walk away from their faith because they have a bad church experience.
Yeah.
And suddenly it turns into, you know, I love Jesus, but I don't want to go to church. I don't have to go to church to love Jesus.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, but it probably does reveal something about your heart.
Mm-hmm.
But you haven't, you, that's not been your experience. Like, you still love the local church. You guys still serve. You still, you know, we go to the same church now.
Mm-hmm.
And you still find that valuable. But has that taken, what kind of work, like inner work, has that taken for you to still find value in? Like, was there a time where you were going to write it off?
Church? Completely? Probably not.
I
think the Lord just was giving me peace in that. Like, I know what the church is. It took me a while to figure out that it wasn't just this place where you come in and you're good for the week. It's this place where, like, you build community with people and your focus is on the Lord, not making yourself better, get well soon, like, type of stuff. Like, it's one of those places that it's run by sinners. Like, the Lord oversees it. It has sinners. It's going to have faults regardless.
Right.
Like, things are going to get missed. I think my idea is, like, I had to take a step back when everything was happening because we were not in the right space to be there. We didn't go to a church around the area for about a couple months because we were just like, we couldn't run into anybody without feeling heartache and things like that. So it's just, it's so difficult to work through. But, you know, you have to work through things to show progress and get over those things, or everything's going to be a standstill. Like, I could still be the same person I was 3 years ago and just kind of sit there and waller and be mad at the church. Or, like, I can see God's glory in all the local churches and being a part of it and serving in that way, because that's what we're called to be.
I guess to transition a little bit, so that, you know, that's been a couple really difficult things in your life. Things that I think would make a lot of people, I don't know, potentially walk away from the faith, walk away from the church, really throw their hands up and really want to have nothing to do with God anymore. Mm-hmm. Why would I keep continuing to try to give my life to something that really, it feels like God keeps like slamming doors on and like things keep happening. Now, whether some of that was self-inflicted or not, it just still feels like, man, that this is a pattern, right? Which transitions us into... you know, something super serious and uncommon. You developed cancer when you were 30 years old.
Yeah, I worked real hard for it.
Well, the question everybody wants to know about your cancer is, are you faking it?
100% fake news. You know, I got racked up all those medical bills for fun. I just really love being seen as the victim.
The guy from Hillsong did that too.
Oh,
he rolled right. He rolled right out on the stage with
the
oxygen tank,
I saw that. No.
Singing song, wrote some worship songs, and raised millions of dollars for his cancer.
My chemo bills are $5,000. I'm like, yeah, I've just got that laying around every month. Yeah, it's just fun. I'm just
giving you the opportunity right now on the Church with Chris podcast to confess.
To confess, I have cancer. It's proven.
Okay.
It's 100% real.
It's on the scans.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So When did you start to get a sense that things really like were not right with your body?
Yeah. So as a kind of preference it, like I do CrossFit.
It started when I was seven and my mom said this thing.
Mom said she never loved me. No, it started at around 30. I think it was right before my 30th birthday.
A year ago?
It was 21, March of 21. Maybe, I don't know. My dates are so messed up. Okay. It's the chemo brain. So if you don't joke,
you have to laugh or you'll cry. Yeah.
So it, I think it was March of 22, maybe. I don't know. My timelines are all messed up. But it was March. And so I'm in CrossFit. I'm constantly lifting weights 4 days a week. And so like I get injuries every now and then. And it just like fades away after like a month. Like something like I have a hurt knee or something like that. So it started with the fact that like once me and Emily started getting intimate, it like I had pain. And I'm like, okay, like this will just pass. Maybe I just pulled something. I don't know. And so from March to November, nothing changed. If anything, the pain increased. And so Emily was like, you need to go see somebody because this is not normal. This is not something that's passing. It's only getting worse.
And it was very specific pain. Very targeted.
Yes.
Area.
Right? Yes. And so, and this was at the point, like we were thinking about doing foster care or looking to like have a family and things like that. So we're like, let's get things straight now. Emily, you do your thing. I'll do mine. Like I'll go to urology and figure out what's going on, which it's not fun going to the doctors, but, it started with me in Columbus and kind of just saw a doctor I did not agree with, essentially told me it was all in my head. Psychologically, because I have some like PTSD and childhood trauma type stuff. And he's like, it's probably just in your head, but we'll just wait 6 months. And if it still hurts, like we'll go back.
That brother needs to be fired.
Yeah. That's what everyone says. Cause it's the whole part is like what I needed was an MRI, but the insurance won't cover MRIs until you jump through every single hoop possible.
Right.
So then I went back to my primary care. They referred me up to Indianapolis after that because I was like, that was a horrible conversation that I didn't want to have. And so in Indy, I had a great conversation with their urologist, and they're like, just asking a bunch of questions, provoking things. They're like, well, it's nothing we can see right now or understand. But what we can do is give you steps. Like, well, let's get you some PT, some pelvic floor stuff, and see if that helps. If it gets better or worse, we kind of know and understand. And so I went to that and worked things out, and nothing kind of helped. And it was all the stretches I was already doing at the gym. So it was kind of this funny thing of like, okay, why am I even here? But it was not until May it finally happened. So November was the first. February was Indianapolis. May is when my pain was consistent. It was just hurting a lot. And I'm like, something's wrong. I called my IU doctor and she's like, okay, I'm going to refer you to get an MRI and figure that out. And so we did the MRI in June because it takes forever for all this stuff to kind of line up. It's like month out. So we did one in June and it was fine. It was my first ever MRI. And so then from there, they came back. They're like, oh, the images are kind of blurry. We need to get another one. So I had to get another MRI in July. And so, and that's where they found something in my pelvis area. Something was inflamed. There was another dark spot. They're like, we need you to refer you to a surgeon. So went to a different IU doctor, a surgeon, and he was like pulling up the scans, very knowledgeable, super nice guy. All these doctors at IU Health, by the way, look like they were on Grey's Anatomy. It's not fair. It's like they're like super handsome or beautiful, and they're like all doctors, and this is what they do in their free time. And it's just like, oh, okay.
And you know that when they step out of the room, they're going to the closet.
Yeah, probably on call.
Get busy.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yep. But my doctor, he was a great guy, understanding. He even called, like, had my mom on the phone asking questions because she's been a nurse for 30 plus years. She has questions. And so he's like, we need to do a biopsy. That's good. Once we figure out what this one thing is, we can know what it is. And so we did the biopsy at the beginning of August. And then 2 weeks later, he gave me the call and he said, it's cancer. And I said, okay. I said, and that's kind of all he said. He's like, it's cancer. And he's like, we'll send pathology. We're going to set you up with oncology next week, blah, 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 blah. But yeah, once that he said it was cancer, I was at work and I'm like, I'm going to go home and talk to my wife because she needs to know and understand. But
I've always wondered how they break that news. You know what I mean? Because, like, is it really straightforward? Is it, like, beat around the bush type of thing? Because the only context you have for something like that is really, like, Grey's Anatomy or something where,
you know. You're like, oh, I'm dead. Like, the cancer word. Like, some people are like, you're instantly dead. And, like, all I knew was he was very kind. It felt like it took forever. I was calling, like, every other day. They said it was going to be done. Once this, and they're like, sorry, there's just been a lot, blah, blah, blah. And so he finally called and was like, hey, like, we got the results back. It did come back as cancer. He was direct forward and gave me next steps, which I was super thankful for, not to like, well, maybe it could be this. We don't know. He was very straightforward in his analysis with the pathologist in that as well.
So what was, when the doctor says you have cancer, what's like the first few things that go through your head?
You kind of go in shock. You're just like, oh, this isn't really happening. You're kind of just like kind of taken back, just kind of hit to the gut too. And so it didn't feel real. Like, I'm 30. Like, you know, people get cancer. Like, kids get cancer. Anyone can get cancer. But it was this kind of like shaking moment, like where I'm like, okay, like this is what my life's going to look like now on. Because I had a plan for my 30s. I was going to start a family, you know, I was going to get in the best shape of my life. Like, I was working towards that, and this kind of put a roadblock in it, and it just didn't, it was a gut check at like, it's not what you planned. So be prepared. And having that conversation with Emily was super tough, and we were just didn't know what to do. So we just, that weekend, we just packed up and went and saw our families. Cause it's just like, that's the only thing we can control right now. is being able to see them.
How did you break that to them? Was it that straight up? Because you told me you called our friends Jared and Abby Kirk and you basically just left a voicemail, right? What did you say?
I said, I have cancer, call me back. And that was
it. Bye.
Bye. Bye. Family. So we have a rule in my family because my family wants to protect us from medical stuff. My mom and dad, they're like, you don't need to know until you need to worry. And so I created this 2-week rule. It's like, you have 2 weeks to tell me something if something's big. And so I let my mom know this entire process when we started getting MRIs and things like that. And so telling my mom was the hardest conversation I ever had because it just felt like I was letting her down. In a sense, and I know it wasn't, and she was not. And it takes a lot for my mom to cry. Like, if you've ever met, my mom's name is Patty Barger, and I'm named after my mom. I'm not ashamed of it. But Patty Barger's crying.
You sound like people have made you feel shame for that before.
They have.
Oh, my God.
If you make Patty Barger cry, something is up. Like, if someone made my mom cry, like, I'm going. So it was just, like, this very hard conversation. And then from there, it kind of just, like, spread out. And I told the people I wanted to in person because eventually I knew it was going to blow up. Like, I want to tell my close friends here because I'm like, hey, this is what's going on. I need you to know.
Yeah. So who do you think was the hardest person for you to tell? Was it Emily or was it, would you say it was your family?
It was both. I think me and Emily, like, future aspect, like, it just kind of put a dent in what we were starting, trying to figure out. And then family was just like, they're your family. And like, you don't understand that. Like, we have been very blessed. I haven't been to a lot of family funerals in my life. And I think people just jump to death instantly. Cause it's like, all we knew at this point, it was cancer. Like, we had a pathologist report and knowing what type it was, but like, we just knew it was cancer and we didn't have any next steps, what it would look like for us. So I think it was just hard to tell my mom, especially. She was just heartbroken and she was like, it's her baby. She, why would anything bad happen to her son?
But yeah,
it did.
So did the doctor start out by telling you pretty much, hey, this is the way this could affect your life moving forward? Or did they kind of start with, cause again, I've never experienced that. Did they start with telling you it's cancer and then let you process that before you come back and they talk to you more about like, hey, this is what this could mean?
So what it was is it was, you have cancer, and then it was like, we're going to get you oncology. Cause it's like him as a surgeon, he couldn't really do anything. It was the surgeon who called me. And so a week later we were in the oncology, which is like the nicest people. Like, they're always just so happy and chipper. And once again, super beautiful people, and I'm just like smiling all the time. And when we were in there for the first time, we just knew it was like cancer. We knew the type, but we couldn't find any information on it. And anything we Googled was just scary. And we were like telling people that we told, don't Google it because it's only going to freak you out. And so we met with our oncologist, Dr. Armstrong, and she was so sweet. The type of cancer that I have is a epithelioid sarcoma, which is that type of tumor, which it branches out to the lymph nodes, and it was spreading. And so it was mastatized, which means it was stage four. So we heard that at the appointment. We're like, kind of like gut drop, like, you hear stage four, you don't think the best outcome possible.
Like, oh, God, just, when you said stage four, like, yeah, my jaw hit the floor. Because that those are the stories where you're like, holy cow. Like,
yeah,
my uncle had just, you know, my uncle passed away maybe a month ago now, maybe a little more than a month ago. And by the time they found out it was cancer, it was like in his, I think it was in his colon, his spine, his lungs, like a couple other places, like in his body. It was just everywhere. It just had like ravaged his body so quickly. And so when you hear stage four, that's what I think about. It's like, you're dead. Yeah. You know, and
like make plans. Like that's what we were sitting, and they gave us, the nurse came in, it's like, this is just a packet of sarcomas, and just like, this is like the department, our Dr. Armstrong is our sarcoma specialist. And the nurse came in, gave a pamphlet, and Emily starts opening and reading all the information about it. And I'm like, Emily, put it down. It's not a good idea. And she's reading it. And she's like, I think you have stage four. And she's like, started worrying. And I'm like, we're just going to sit and wait. But it was a really good conversation with them, with the doctor and nurse, to like kind of understand where I'm at. The reason it's stage four is because it spread from my tumor to some of my lymph nodes. We didn't know how many lymph nodes were infected, but that's what's causing it as stage four. Once it spreads otherwhere, I think that's where it's like stage five. But they did, before that appointment, they did a scan of my chest and an MRI of my pelvis, and there's nothing has spread outside my pelvis from the lymph nodes. So that was like, praise God, and understanding. And so the conversation we had with her was, okay, like, we have a game plan. She's like, I know what this is. I know how it travels. I know how we can tackle it. And so she was like, we're going to put you on this medication. You're going to take it twice a day. And she's like, this is what's going to help shrink the tumor and get rid of the cancer. And I was like, okay. Like, because at that point, we're like, I'm going to go bald, radiation. I'm finally going to lose the weight that I always wanted to. And that didn't happen.
The Lord works in mysterious ways. That's right.
He just wants me big. So it's like, nope, you will just go normal life. Like, this is a targeted treatment chemo where it only attacks the cancerous cells, which is amazing and unheard of, because it's like, when you hear chemo, they attack all cells or radiation. This is just like, oh, these cancer cells, this medicine is going to target it, so you don't have to do chemo or radiation at this time.
Did you feel those affecting you quite a bit? I mean, I was watching you every day, but you know, like at work, and just outside of work, you know, hanging out and stuff, but I don't know if anybody you know, obviously you don't really know what pain level somebody is dealing with.
I think it was I just think the big thing was fatigue. Like, I just felt extremely tired. Like, I was still able to work out. I was still able to do stuff. But it was just like, I just felt very tired by the end of the day. Like, and other than that, like, when I started it, I felt a little bit like a cold was coming on. Like, that kind of like, I'm starting to get sick.
Yeah.
But other than that, the side effects were not that bad. It just, fatigue was a huge one. Just trying to like calm down, and I was super tired.
Well, I remember one day I walked in your office at work, and I think you were on the, your light was out, and you were laying on the floor, and I'm like, this must be just pretty bad.
It was
like
bad.
You were pretty, it was jacking you up pretty bad.
Well, yeah, that was further.
That was probably
on
the height of it, wasn't it?
It was the height of it, because
it was a couple of weeks where you were just like in really, really, really bad pain.
Because it's in a very aggressive form of cancer, like sarcoma itself. Like, it goes undiagnosed all the time because like, people don't see it, catch it, and they usually catch it too late. And so thankfully, like, we did what we did, like, we saw the doctors when we did, and we had a game plan for the next couple months.
So the goal with the medicine, with the chemo pills, was basically to try to shrink the tumor to a manageable size to get surgery.
Correct.
Right.
Yes.
And obviously the surgery was going to be complicated for a couple of reasons, right? One, you had mentioned it was very rare. Like yes. the place it was, the type of mm-hmm. cancer, it was kind of rare. Not many people had done. I think you said your surgeon had never done one.
He's never done one.
The person he was consulting with had only done one
in his lifetime.
After like 30 years.
35 years in practice, only saw one type of this type of sarcoma.
So how did you feel when you heard that?
I think
you were like, great. It's amateur hour.
What else is new? Like at this point, like I got cancer at 30. There's nothing else I can like unforesee. Like it happens. Like we're just like, okay. And like with me and Emily, we just took it step by step. Like it was like, okay, we're going to start on the chemo meds. Then we're just going to work on that and shrink the stuff. It didn't go as planned. It was still very aggressive, but eventually it did start shrinking after it got bigger, unfortunately. And so it was like, okay, it was working. And then it was like, okay, it's time for surgery. Mm. And then it's like, okay, that's the next step for us. We need to ask things about like having kids. What is that going to look like? How is this going to affect the placement of where the tumor is? It's going to cause a lot of difficulty for us to ever get pregnant, as we're told. But it was one of those really sad situations. If you ever had surgery, they have to go through everything that could go wrong because they have to tell you so you don't wake up and be like, what happened? So that was a tough conversation we had with our surgeon. He's like, these are our plans, A, B, and C. We're hoping for A. B is okay. We want to avoid C and D, but I have to tell you what could happen if you wake up. So it was just kind of a very hard conversation that we had. But thankfully, we were able to process with friends later that day to just kind of like, okay, like those are worst case scenarios. And thankfully, we didn't get plan C or D. We've been truly blessed in how God has just kind of prepared us for this whole entire journey has been so crazy.
Yeah. I mean, you're still healing post-surgery. But obviously that's going to, you know, take a while to get to 100%. So are you comfortable sharing what they said were like A through D? Like these, like, and if not, that's fine.
Yeah.
I'll cut this part out.
That's okay.
Because I think like,
what can you say on a podcast and not get canceled?
I think it just adds to the gravity of like the severity of the issue. Because I think, you know, when you really start talking about like where your cancer was located, you know, the outcome, the potential outcomes of a surgery that's that difficult and just mm-hmm. uncertain. When you start talking through, you know, all the options, when you get to C and D, I mean, I know people who would rather just the cancer take them.
Yeah.
Probably, you know, and so
yeah,
with as much as you're comfortable sharing.
Yeah, no, I'm okay with saying it. I just want to make sure it's okay.
I'm not even monetized, so
okay, cool.
I can't get demonetized at this point.
Good.
I know.
So the location was at the base of my penis, so like it was inside of me, and so where it was located at was it was so overgrown to the two sides of the penis, quote unquote. And so it had overgrown.
Use a different word so I don't get blocked.
You told me. I'm open to it.
I don't.
Peener.
Peener.
My manhood.
That.
Is that a good one?
That's
my
a good one, actually.
My manhood. There's two sides to my manhood. Mm-hmm. And on that one side where the tumor was located, it eroded slowly onto the other side. Mm-hmm. And so for them to remove that part is the blood flow that would go to one side of my manhood. And so that would be okay. Like, we don't know what that's going to look like for us, like trying to have kids. Yeah. They're going to remove that. And so plan A was just to remove it. Everything works normal because the three things they want to make sure is that the cancer's gone, that I can be able to urinate correctly, and three, to have a normal sex life. Those are the goals and steps in order of like cancer urologist. And so plan A is just to remove it and hope everything works. Mm-hmm. B is there's going to be some problems like ED down the road that could affect having kids and things like that. Plan C is something goes wrong where that tumor's located interferes with the urethra. Mm-hmm. And we then have to reroute your urinary tract to another place.
You had to be sitting there thinking,
I was just
what
like,
in the actual world?
Essentially, that would mean I'm sitting down and peeing the rest of my life.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, I did not want that. And then the worst case scenario is all the tissue, they do all of that, and then all the tissue dies in my manhood, goes necrotic, and it just falls. I just have to cut it off. Yeah, I know. It's not fun. It was not a fun conversation.
Dude, yeah. I just can't imagine processing that.
Yeah.
Like, these are the potential outcomes. or whatever. So, I mean, praise God, you think you're at least on A, right? Yeah. Like a, you're on a good, B. You're on a good track.
Yeah.
Right. You, like it, it's been a good outcome.
Yeah.
You know, praise God, seriously. Cause like, I just talk about depression. Like, gosh, I just can't really imagine another scenario that could be more just like defeating,
yeah.
You know? And so, yeah, that'd be a tough one.
I think it was good that I had people to trust and have the conversations about this, like with you or Eric.
You just
or
told
like,
jokes
just,
about it
just
the whole time.
Just made jokes all the time about yeah. it. And it's just like, I can open up. Because
what else are you
going to
do?
Like, you can't. Like, it's just like, if you worry about it all the time, it's just, I don't want to be stuck in that. Like,
yeah.
And so I'm thankful for that. I had like open dialogues with people where I could have the conversation and made it easier. Like,
right.
I don't know if it was denial or the Lord's peace of just like,
yeah,
it's going to be like, it is what it is. Like, I'm dealt this hand. I'm going to play it out as long as I can. And whatever that looks like, whatever it looks like.
Do you think you and Emily have grown a lot closer because of this? I mean, has that really forced you to, I don't know, maybe just grow in a different level of comfort with each other,
yeah.
You know, a different level of intimacy that probably a lot of people don't ever have to explore.
Yeah. And it things was like our marriage by far was not perfect by any means, but I think it has.
What?
Your marriage is not perfect.
What?
Mine's great. No. But there's always been problems with us and we've always been consistently working through them, but it does open up the conversation for us of like us working through a lot of stuff. And then this happened and it mm-hmm. caused a huge just rush of just different emotions and looking towards the future, what yeah. that going to look like for us, like not only between us, but our family, like mm-hmm. what is that going to look like for
yep.
us? And so
wow.
it's tough.
That is tough. And it even affects parents. Like, okay, if we maybe can't have kids because of something like this, I mean, how does that affect my parents, like who want to be grandparents, you know, that kind of stuff. Like that's almost
oh, yeah.
a whole different conversation.
Yeah.
Of just sadness, you know?
Yeah. I'm just like, what is that going to look like? Like my parents are getting older. Like,
yeah.
How are they going to be able to see like if I have kids graduate high school, like things like that, like
yeah.
those things come to mind, but we're just like taking it one step at a time. Like that's what we can do. Like if we have kids when we're older, great. That's awesome. All of our friends will, their kids will be our babysitters. That's what it is. So we'll call in
put
your
my
kids.
To
yeah,
work.
That's right. That's I right. might be at my son's graduation at like 65 years old, but you know what? I'll
yeah.
be there. So
what do you feel like, if anything, God has taught you through the whole cancer situation? Because, I mean, I'm telling you, like, you go through the fall,
yeah.
which, you know, you brushed over it pretty quick, but, like, you thrashed your legs. Like, you jacked up so many,
oh, yeah.
like, so many broken bones and tendons
yeah.
and all kinds of stuff. I mean, you destroyed church pews, for God's sake. Like, you still need to apologize to him for that.
Yeah, I know. The one
and
lady, I did knock out her pew, and I'm sorry.
Falling
I'm sorry.
30 feet out of a cherry picker?
30 feet
out, slamming into pews. I mean, like, that's just such a traumatic, like, physically traumatic thing, right?
Yeah.
And then the whole recovery process, mm-hmm. and then the emotional pain that comes with that, the whole church kind of exit, the emotional pain that comes with that.
Yeah.
I mean, really, like, by the time you get cancer, it's like, really, what else? What else can you throw? You know, I'm not asking for
yeah.
worse things to happen to you. I'm just
what's
saying,
next?
how do you feel with your faith at this point? Like, I know you personally, but if you
yeah.
were going to like encourage somebody who is just like really going through hell and
yeah.
really just like over and over just feels like I cannot catch a freaking break in life.
Yeah.
What would your encouragement be in what you have learned about the Lord?
Yeah.
And maybe his provision, or, you know, how you found comfort in that,
yeah.
are there any scriptures that you have really
yeah.
clung to, or like songs that just like got you through a season
yeah.
or something?
You know, the Lord is good. And like, I've known that, like being growing up in church and like understanding that, that's kind of been my rock. And I think that's like what has got me through most of it. And so that would be my first encouragement, is like seeking the Lord, especially in those tough times. Like when you're going through hell, I promise you, like, the Lord is present. You're not alone in it, though you feel alone. He is going to be there with you through the entire thing. And there was tough conversations with me. And it's like, I could have this cancer and die. And like, what does that conversation say to like unbelievers, where it's like, oh, he didn't have enough faith to like, God did not heal him of this and do this. But like,
the funny part is you wouldn't even have to be explaining that to unbelievers. You would literally be having to explain that to like church people, right? Yeah. Like, well, he prayed and God didn't heal his cancer. He must not have had enough faith. And
it didn't happen. What's going on?
Yeah.
And I think it's just such a beautiful thing that the Lord is still going to get glory. Like if I have like my brother come to the Lord through this, or if I have somebody else, like that internal life is way more important than my part-time life here. Like I'd rather have that. And I think that just took me time and like being in the Word and just like spending time with the Lord to kind of just like calm my heart about that.
Yeah.
But just going through hell is like, you're not alone in that, like with just that closeness. And I think, and just understanding is the Lord like worked it out perfectly. Like, I understand like these hard stuff has happened, but there's been so much joy around these things too. Like I said, I would not regret ever like being a part of that church plant. I think it was great. I grew a lot, lots of joy. It ended not the way I expected to, but I wouldn't take it back.
Right.
This cancer, like it's a lot, but it's not what I expected to be, but the Lord's still working through that. Like I was in counseling for years before this, preparing me mentally for this, like an understanding of this as well. And so it's just like God's provision, like there's a timing for everything. And like, if I would, what happens if I had cancer right after I got let go from the church? Like how is it? And God's timing is perfect. And I'm going to rest in that. And anyone should rest in that and not give up hope in Him above all else.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think I'm horrible at memorizing scripture. I don't know about you.
Most people are.
Jesus wept. It's somewhere in John, I think.
Yeah.
But Psalms, is it? Oh, gosh, I'm going to screw it up because I promised this. It was Psalms 32 or 23.
I'll look it up.
Yeah, I can say it out loud.
The big book.
Let's
go.
Let's go. ESV only.
Study Bible.
Psalms, I want to say it's Psalms 32. Or 23. It's the one they read at all funerals. It's the one that the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He lays me down in green pastures.
Which one was it?
Psalms, I think I want to say 23 or 32.
I'm just going to see if you're right.
It's one of those two. See?
Is it bad that I don't know that either?
That's okay.
I don't even know that.
No, but let's see.
23, the Lord is my shepherd.
Yes, yeah, 23. And it was one of them.
The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in paths of righteousness for His name's sake. That's a hard one. For His name's sake. He leads me in paths of righteousness through cancer for His name's sake.
Yeah.
Like, how crazy is that?
It kind of hurts a little.
To know that you have this thing so that the Lord's namesake could be like awesome.
Yeah.
That's like, crazy.
It is. And there's been tough times. And there's been tough times where I'm like, no, I don't want it anymore.
Yeah. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I'll fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. Got any oil?
No oil. No.
Okay, you're out of luck. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever.
Amen.
I mean, you kind of had to think about like eternity, right?
Yeah.
When you're faced, it sounds super cliche, but it's like we're all going to die. We're all going to be forced to face mortality. And typically we face that at other people's funerals. I think that's why like people typically listen during funerals, like they're paying attention, I would say more than like a wedding because of the severity and the seriousness of like mortality. So, you know, when you're thinking through, did this force you to ask some pretty tough questions about your faith or like theologically, like what you believe, you know?
I think
because of what could be next,
yes,
right? Life could be after this life.
Maybe just like more what eternity would look like. I think it might like think like what, because everyone has different beliefs of what the afterlife is going to look like. Like the Bible's clear on certain things. We know that.
Yeah, but you were like, trying to get your 10 virgins and
But I was just like, I think it just was preparing me of just like, it's going to be so much better than this life could ever offer. Mm. Like this, because I have Jesus and I am righteous through him, I know it's going to be way better than I ever create in my head. And I think it's the other side of it is like, I always thought like, oh, just let me go in my sleep. Like, let me just like one night fall asleep if it just, it doesn't work out. But like, I think there's such beauty in that for the hope that's to come, you know, and just not having to worry about it, whatever this world is going to offer. Like, it's going to be so much better in heaven.
Yeah. And, you know, obviously the story doesn't stop here for now. So it's like, it's been a good, like a positive journey for you so far, at least like with the outcome of the surgery and everything, you're still healing. What does post-surgery look like for you? You're healing, like physically, you've got to wait to heal a while. What does it look like past this point?
So what they did in surgery is they removed the tumor, got clean margins, and then they also removed several lymph nodes. They couldn't remove all my lymph nodes because then things would go awry. So what they're doing right now is I'm still on this chemo medication, and then anything that was left behind, it would wipe out, and then hopefully in 6 months to a year to take off the medication. But what it's going to look forward to is now it's just healing continuously. Like, I'm on 6 out of 8 weeks of off of being able to work for this time, and then I'm supposed to go back to work, which is crazy. But every 3 months I'll have a scan to see kind of like what is it looks like, because they don't want to take a scan right after surgery because everything's just so swollen. So they're waiting for everything to go down. They'll take scans every 3 months and just prepare to see if anything comes up. But since they removed that tumor, which is like the base of where all everything spread out, that's the good thing. And so they're just trying to clean out the rest of the lymph nodes that may be cancerous.
So it's not quite over.
It's the journey,
but you are rejoicing through it.
Yeah.
And we have a vacation planned this summer
that
we're looking forward to when we can kind of escape some of that, right?
Yes.
It's our 10-year anniversary trip, but we invited them and some other friends too. So it should be a fun time. But we're praying for victory in the situation. If you could ask everybody watching or listening to pray for you in a couple specific ways, what do you think they'd be?
Yeah, I would think number one is be praying for my wife, Emily. She has literally gone through everything I have minus the cancer. And so she has been so strong and just her endurance, like I'm now getting back to a place where I can help, but she's done everything. So be praying for her and her stamina and just that. It's been like you don't realize, like if you don't do anything around the house, like and Bria's left with doing everything else, like that's a lot of work, like on top of working a full-time job.
That's our life.
I know, but it is a lot. And so it's just be praying for Emily is number one. Be praying for me that healing takes place. Like I believe that God can heal me at any time and moment and there's healing taking place, but that it just continues to heal as well. And just for my family too, like that this be just such an open door for those who don't know Jesus to come to know them. Like this is such a great opportunity. Like this cancer has allowed me to have conversations like with no fear of just like sharing the name of Jesus. Like, why not? Like what stopped me before and what I can do now is the only thing I have cancer and I'm quote unquote closer to death than I've been before. So just keep praying for those opportunities. For sure.
Well, it's funny too, because like that kind of conversation, if you start talking about faith when you're also talking about your cancer with somebody, it's like they're not gonna just be like, whoa, I'm gonna stop you right there.
Like, hold on. You said the C word, right?
Nobody's doing that, you know? Like, so yeah, no, it is a good opportunity. But I think watching the way that people suffer. So whether you're a Christian or not a Christian, you know, watching the way that people suffer is such a testament to like what they believe and the faith that they have and like how real their faith is to them, how assured they feel of it, right? Because like, I don't know, if I was you, I'd be freaking out if I didn't believe in God. I'd be freaking out if I didn't know what came next or have some idea of like, well, this is what the Bible tells me. I don't have to fear, right? And so I think that would just be, it'd be tough, man.
Yeah.
It'd be tough to have no hope.
Gosh, it scares that way. Me. It does for those people that are going through it. Like we think about that, like those who are going through something similar to I am, like it's, I can't imagine them not knowing the Lord and being in it just like in this chaos.
Yeah. And it takes surrender and it takes, again, it takes turning away from things that you naturally just want to do, you know, with your life and surrendering that to Jesus and to God's plan. And that's hard without cancer.
Yeah.
I'd say it's still hard with cancer.
Yeah.
It's hard to surrender a life that you want to be your own to give into God's hands.
Yeah.
And say, I'm going to live a way that you want me to live, even though I don't have every answer in this book, even though I don't understand why I'm going through what I'm going through or what I've gone through in the past or what I went through as a child. Like, there is something to be said for watching those people suffer well through all of that. And so, man, I love you so much. And, you know, you are one of my best friends. I appreciate you. I appreciate Emily. And you guys really are just a testament to everybody around you. Doesn't really matter where you go, just the way that you've handled this and the way that you've just, I think the way that you just really do like resonate and like emulate Jesus well in your life.
Thank you.
You're not perfect. Obviously, Emily's not perfect, you know, but you guys are great friends.
Yeah.
And you're great, great examples of Jesus. So
thank you.
Yeah, man. Tell people where they could follow your journey at all if you're, because you have a YouTube channel.
Yeah.
Right.
So I do. So the problem was, is like, I was just, so many people wanted updates of what was going on in my life. So what I did was I just made videos and upload them to the YouTube just so I can say
YouTube.
I'm old, man. I don't care anymore.
That's so
it's
funny.
Better than the that Facebook. So uploaded it at YouTube. And so just kind of where we're steps we're at in our journey and what you could be praying for and what's been going on, just because it in the beginning it was super hard telling everyone every single thing and every detail. So updates, we've been doing that through there. So through YouTube, you can check that out. It's also through any social media I have.
Patrick Barger.
The Pat Barger is my handle.
Or 30 Flirty and Cancer.
30 Flirty and Cancer is the title of the first one.
The first video.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Little 30s.
You sure do take it seriously.
I do. You have to.
Pat Barger, I love you.
Love you. Chris Scott.
Thank you for being here.
Glad to be here.
If you guys have made it this far, you are absolute champions, and I love you so much. Thank you for joining us for this episode of Church with Chris. Again, if you're interested in anything related to podcasting or gear or equipment, that stuff's listed down below. We are on Spotify, Apple Podcast. I post different clips on YouTube here and there. I have some exciting conversations coming up that I'd love for you to subscribe for. So please hit that subscribe button and turn on the notification bell. Is that a thing?
Do you have the buttons? Do they pop up?
Bro, I don't know.
Come on,
I can probably make it. I can probably make it pop up.
You gotta be able to go like.
All right. Have a good night. It's our bedtime.
Night.